Fine, let's go. So last time we had discussed Moshe, according to the Gemara, having once been a Kohen. We saw 4 days. Either he was never a Kohen, he was a Kohen and he lost it because God punished him. He was a Kohen for a week, or he stayed a Kohen for life. It's just that his children didn't become Kohanim. We focus both on the local considerations as well as the global considerations of, why would that have been? And the Gemara's claim that, he sinned by not accepting God's task for him. And in Parsha, for those of you who are there, we added the claim by Rabbi Moshe Navon that the reason you have a shalshelet on Vayishchat, on Moshe shechting the carbon in the process of giving the kahuna over to Aaron, might be because, he was regretting having sinned such that he lost.
Which sin do we think it was?
Not saying yes to God when God said. Okay, so what we want to do is say make a few quick points on that, and then move on to the last part of this Gemara, which is, I guess, the last thing we'll do for this man is Moshe's Melech. Okay, so here's, so these are like some assorted comments on that, and then we'll talk a little bit about Melech. And okay, so in the Daf HaLaDaf, they just collect a few Makara just to sort of highlight some of the issues about Aaron having been a Levi, becoming a Kohen, Moshe becoming a Kohen. If you need to go do things, okay. Okay. So first of all, the Gemara in Sanhedrin notes the following. That it says that Aaron built a mizbeach. Vayar Aaron vayiven mizbeach. Okay. Now, what? So, well, you tell me, where is this? Where is that pasuk from? By the Egel. Right, by the Egel, what does that show? What does that show? That he was functioning as a Kohen, right? Meaning the Jews came to him, they said, let's worship idols. So he says, fine, we'll build a Mizbeach, we'll worship, which implies, contrary to what we saw last week, that he's functioning as a Kohen earlier, not in a good way, right? The Jews take advantage of that to try to get him to worship. You get him, his help to worship the Egel, but he does take on that task. So doesn't that push against it? Then the Gemara says that Hur was killed, right? Because the Gemara says, why did Aaron build the Mizbeach? Because first the Jews had asked Hur, who's Hur? Right, so Hur was, right, if you remember in Shemot Chav Dalet, which apparently you don't, that he was one of the leaders who had got up with who is he? Hello? Vayikach lo et Kalev et Ephrat de lo et Chor. Chor lo et Reiv early to Ud Betzalel. It's Betzalel's grandfather. Betzalel ben Reiv and Chor. Okay? So Chor, according to the Gemara, had first been approached to build it and he was killed. So the Marsha says, sorry. And the Gemara then it said, and what was he worried about? Aaron was worried that if they killed Aaron as well, then the pasuk in Eicha says in Yareg b'Mikdash Kashem Kohen v'Navi that if in the Mikdash a Kohen and a Navi are both killed, so like that's the end. That's like the greatest sin. And Hur was a Navi, Aaron was a Kohen, and Aaron was worried that if they killed him and Aaron, then the Jews would have committed the greatest sin of killing an Navi and a Kohen in the Mishkan, and therefore he was willing to worship Avodah Zarah, essentially. Okay, sure. I mean, yes. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara there in Sanhedrin Zion says, and if they had done that, they never would have been. There would be no tshuva. And there he says, but the Egel, even Avodah Zarah, there is a possibility of tshuva. So what does the Marasha ask? Clearly, the Gemara's assumption is that Aaron was a Kohen then and earlier. The problem is our Gemara assumes that he only gets that status in, well, this week's Parsha, you know, Parsha Tzav, this week and next week. When he's inaugurated, yeah, you guys did Shnai Mikra, at the end of Parsha Perichet, it becomes a Kohen then. So the Marsha says, well, maybe he was a Bechor, and therefore he wasn't functioning properly as a Kohen yet. That it was still when the Bechor has had it, and he was, in that sense, at least the oldest boy. Now, the obvious problem is, as the Rami Boyan said, what are you talking about? He wasn't Bechor. Right? Miriam is the oldest, right? And therefore, you can't say, right? Because what is he really saying? The Gemara there assumes he's a Kohen earlier. But we just said he isn't. That, at least according to one sheet in the Gemara, it's in this week's parasha where it transfers from Moshe to Aaron. Right? That Moshe was before, and then he inaugurates it. So, right, last week what we had done is where did the Gemara get it? But now what we need to deal with is the second part, which is, how does this work with other traditions in Chazal? So the Marsha wants to say, no, he wasn't a Kohen until this week, but he was functioning as a Kohen because he was a Bechor. Right? That's how he solves it. But the obvious problem is he isn't. So he says, well, maybe he's like a Bechor. Okay, right? Maybe you got to fudge it a little bit and say he was, you know, the oldest boy, and maybe that was enough, or something like that. Or what's the other possibility? That you have to go back to our Gemara and say, or so it could be two separate traditions, right? Or like namely that Gemara could be following the position that he was never, Moshe was never a Kohen, or you say that even though he was only made the Kohen in this week's Parsha and Tzav, Moshe was already told that he was going to be punished by losing the kohuna when he actually sinned. And therefore, Aaron was told that he would be the Kohen in Mitzrayim. And therefore, even if he wasn't actually the Kohen until this week, until Parshat Tzav, where he's inaugurated and anointed as Kohen, it still might have been that he was Kohen in potential, right? So what that brings into... first point I wanted to add from last week is that you have to deal with this other tradition, that Aaron was clearly a Kohen before this week. So either deal with that, he was functioning as a Kohen not because of Kohen reasons, like he was a Bechor, and then you have the problem, well, he's not really a Bechor. Or you say that when the Gemara says that Moshe was a Kohen for these 7 days, that doesn't necessarily preclude the possibility that Aaron already knew he was going to be the Kohen. And that obviously complicates the narrative, because that tells you it's not that Moshe, you know, as we saw, some of the Mepharshim said, yeah, Moshe, God made Moshe the Kohen for 7 days just to rub it in his face.
Yeah,
right. This tradition is at least opposed to that tradition, because he's saying, no. Moshe was Kohen for 7 days, but the cards were already on the table. It wasn't like God waited for him to taste kahuna and then stripped it from him. It's just that he...
That tradition
says that's when he was told? That was one... Yeah.
I thought he was together with it, but he told.
Well, I don't know, right? Yeah. Right, or maybe, yes, you're getting a taste of it, even knowing it's going to be stripped from you. I don't know. What? Now, there's another possibility that maybe, that is also brought up by Panim Yafo, that maybe earlier, like all Jews, right? Sometimes all Jews are referred to as Bnei Bechor Yisrael, so maybe Aaron, maybe all Jews were at some level able to be, Kohen. Now, there is an implication to the question of when did Aaron do this, in a more very midrashic way, which is, so the Ateret Tzvi says that Moshe, remember, he killed the Mitzri. According to Chazal, he killed the Mitzri b'shem ha-Mefarash, by saying God's ineffable name. So the Ateret Tzvi says, why? What drove Chazal to say that? That follows the tradition that that Moshe was still a Kohen at that point, because a Kohen can't become Tamei Mei, therefore can't kill somebody Be'adayim.
Oh my God.
Yes. I found that funny also. Okay. Anyways, but my point is, the reason I bring it, even though it's a little bit strange, is just to highlight that methodologically, right, after you figure out why Chazal say something, both, you know, broad strokes and locally, you then need to integrate it into other Agadic traditions. That's right. That was really the point of this. Now, there is an interesting piece in the Tzvi Tzadik of the Tzvi Elimelech Belozov, who suggests that if you notice that when Moshe dies, right before Moshe dies, what does he do? He blesses Am Yisrael. So he wants to suggest that maybe who traditionally blesses? The Kohanim. So he suggests that maybe Moshe got like a momentary kahuna back at the end of the life. This is a very Hasidish part, but okay. And the way he does this is because Moshe Ish Elokim is Bikamatria Birchat Kohanim. Don't ask me. And he also notes that the Gematria of Zot HaBracha Asher Berach Moshe B'nei Yisrael is the same as Yivarechecha Hashem Yishmerecha Yer Hashem Panav Eilecha V'Yichuneka Yisa Hashem Panav Eilecha V'Yisem Lecha Shalom at 2,718. So, I don't know. I just was showing you some ideas. Okay, fine. That's all I really wanted to say about that. Now I want to make two more points in this Agadata, okay? So, one more Agadata, if you remember, is that within this Gemara, and then we'll get to the Melech point, is the Gemara had said, how did the Gemara know that Moshe had to have been punished at some point? So, exactly, because the Gemara said that God got angry. And the Gemara had quoted a tradition that what? What? That if God gets angry at somebody, right? And then the Gemara says, "But wait a second." The Kol Charon Avshav B'Torah Nemar Baroshim Vaktiv VaYetze Moshe Miim Paro Bechariyaf. That Moshe left Paro with wrath. V'lo Amar Levilomidi. And the Gemara says, "No, Amar Levish Lakish Shatru Satro V'Yatsa." There was a mark, literally, that when Moshe got angry, he left. He slapped Paro across the face. Ah, right, and we said that the Chiddush there was the Gemara seems to think that Ve'yichav is not just God, it's
anyone.
Now, good. Now, what exactly is going on in that? What is, because again, the notion that there's consequence of God being angry, that's one thing. What is the Gemara doing? So, I'll give you a few pshatim. One of my friends a few months ago had posted this. I'll throw it out. Josh Skutsky had suggested that maybe the reason the Gemara thinks that he's hitting him, why was the Gemara compelled to believe that he slapped him? Right, so he said, first of all, the machlok in the Gemara about whether Moshe slapped Paro or not might come down to whether you think that even an evil king should be respected, which in general is a tension in the Gemara. Point one. Point two is he suggests, why would Reish Lakish be convinced that Moshe slapped him? Moshe got angry. Moshe got angry. But why did he get so angry? So one possibility is that he's just getting angry because Paro's being chosbedek, right? I'll never see you again. Josh suggested something interesting, which was maybe this, what the Gemara is saying is that Moshe was trying one last attempt either to convince Paro not to have the Makkah, or if you remember, we talked about in Parsha a few months ago, that one of the things that emerges about Paro over and over is his depraved indifference towards his own people. Right? That he, right, there's the Makkah of Dam, and what does the Pasuk say? He turns around, V'loshat libo gam lazod, he just didn't care. He sees his people dying, he doesn't care.
By Makot Bechoro, that's like the epitome of it. To the point where, if you remember, the Midrash Tanhuma says there was a rebellion. Bechoro said, everything Moshe said has come true. Let us go, let the Jews go or we're going to die. And what a, and their own parents said, no. So what did they do? They rebelled and they killed their own parents. And the Midrash says, because it says that God struck them Bivchoreyim. Bivchoreyim could either mean by having the Bechoros die or through the Bechoros. They rebelled because they said, you don't care about us, you're going to let us die. So it was a double makkah. The parents got killed for being callous and letting their children die, and then the children died because they were Bechoros. So based on this, Josh said, maybe what the Gemara is doing, that this Agadata is part of that Agadah tradition, which is that Moshe was trying to wake Paro up from his indifference. And he basically slapped him and said, wake up, man. Your people are going to die. And maybe the Gemara here is suggesting that Moshe slapped Paro because to try to shake him out of this, you know, this callousness that was leading to the death of his own people. Right, so I thought that was an interesting claim, right, to wonder what is it that that midrashically we see? Why do we have to see Moshe getting angry? Parenthetically, the Vinyakir Le'Ephraim says we learned something else, which is, remember, we talked about last week that Moshe was the Anav Mikol Adam. He was the most humble, right? And that's what led the Ramban to think that Moshe's refusal to lead wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Even though God got angry at him, he said, yeah, but it's not so bad because he's supposed to be humble. And yet, here you see him slapping the king of the most powerful nation in the world. So then Ephraim says that what you learn from here is even humble, that there has to be a limit to Anava. And if that's the case, no, let me say this one, right, that might work in this context. So I would say why? Because remember, if part of the reason he was punished was because he took humility too far, then it would be a nice balance to see him finally shaking himself out of it when necessary. He also notes that it could be, right? That's not what he says. That's what I'm suggesting. He says something different, which is that no, Kohanim maybe can't be Kanaim, which doesn't really work with the Pinchas Gemara, right? But he says maybe Kohanim have to be, you know, beloved by the people, and therefore even if it's a good thing to be a Kanoi, there's a limit to maybe you can't be a Kanoi if you are a Kohen. Again, I think that's wrong. I think that shot is wrong because it goes against the fact that Pinchas is given Kohuna for being a Kanoi. Yeah, maybe. Right now, one last thing, then we'll move on from the Kohen thing, is the Achronim note, okay. Remember, there were four Deir in the Gemara. Either he was never a Kohen, he was always a Kohen, his children aren't Kohanim, he's a Kohen but he lost it, or he was a Kohen just for these 7 days. Now, according to at least one of those Shitot, the one that he was never a Kohen, and possibly according to the Shitot that he was a Kohen but he lost it, depending on when you think he lost it, you have to still deal with this week's Parsha, which is, what's the problem left from this week's Parsha? He serves as a Kohen. So you still have to deal with that problem, which is, okay, fine. Isn't he a Kohen, at least in this week's Parsha? What's the obvious answer? So either you just say it's a Horad Shah, right? It was just, he wasn't a Kohen. He was just, you know, God told him to be a Kohen temporarily. I mean, you know, or act as a Kohen. Now, if you think he is a Kohen, midrashically, it's also important to know, the Pnei Menachem notes this, that the another motivation for saying he was a Kohen might be part of a different tradition. And that is that there are three crowns. Right? The Mishnah says in Jergeva, the Shlosha Ktarim, what are they? Malchut, Kohuna, and Torah. And it could be that part of this tradition might be pushing us to see Moshe as like the complete person who at least temporarily wore all three, because, and now that brings us back to the Gemara that we hadn't seen, which is Moshe not just as Kohen, but as Melech, okay? What? Torah. Obviously Moshe's. That one I don't need to explain. Moshe got the Torah. Good? We're good. Okay. What? You could. Okay.
But now let's go to Melech. So if you remember, the Gemara had said, and this was the Elisheva one, that Chamesh Smachor Ha'it Elisheva Yeter Al Benot Yisrael, that Elisheva had five joys, which we read 2 weeks ago. This was Kuf Be'ed Amon Aleph. Remember? Yivama Melech, her brother-in-law was king. Isha Kohen Gadol. Benos Skan. Ben Min HaMishol Mocham HaVachia Nasi Shevet Vavel Al Shnei Boneha. Right? So, her brother-in-law was king. Her husband was Kohen Gadol. Her son was the assistant Kohen Gadol. Her grandson, Pinchas, is the Mashiach Melchama. Her brother, Nachshon, is the head of a Shevet. And yet, and this is what we talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, she's mourning two of her sons. That's next week's Parsha. Right? That her sons die. But the Gemara says, K'tani miyat Yivama Melech. What we learn, at any rate, is that her brother was brother-in-law was a king. Melech in Kohen Gadol lo, which implies a king, yes, and not a Kohen Gadol. So Gemara says, no, Ema Af Melech. Maybe he was Kohen Gadol plus king. Ketanoi, as we saw in the Machlok Ketanoim, Vayicharav Hashem Moshe, Yeshua ben Karcha, Omer Kol Charonav, Shematora, Nemer Baroshem, Vizet, Lo Nemer Baroshem. Right, so every time it says Charonav, there's a mark, Rishum ben Yochai Omer, and again, this is what we did last week. Yeah. So then the Gemara continues. I'll skip down a few lines. So after it says that Moshe slapped him, the Gemara says, "Umiyam reish Lakish achi." Did he really slap him? V'achdiv nitzavta likrato al sfat hayor. It says that you should stand by Paro by the river. V'amar reish Lakish melechu. He was a king. The hisbir lo upon him, so he had to honor him. And Yochanan bar Rasha, veis banecha bo eif, right? Bo, and he was right arrogant towards him. So the Gemara says, "Eifoch, switch it." Right, so again, explicitly, as I mentioned before, the machloket of whether he slapped Paro might come down to whether you honor the person of the king, and therefore he's wicked, you don't honor him, or you honor the title, the office. Amar Rabbi Yana, and more then quotes Rabbi Yana, l'olam de emot malchut alecha. The fear of the kingship should always be on you. Dechtiv, v'yardu kol avadecha ela elai. Says, and all your avadim should come to you. V'ilu l'dide lo ka'amar lei. But to Paro himself, he didn't, right? Meaning he spoke to the servants and say that you're going to bow to me, but he didn't say it explicitly about Paro. Rabbi Yochanan says, how do we know that you should honor the king? From Achav, that Achav, Yad Hashem Haital Eliyahu, Vayishanez Madav Yarat of Ne'achav, that Eliyahu ran in front of Achav, even though he was a wicked king. So Amar Ula said, Bikesh Moshe Malchut Vilo Not Nulo. Moshe wanted to be king. But he wasn't. Dichtiv al tikrav halo. Because by the snare, what does it say? Don't come closer. The ein halom ela malchut. Then the Gemara makes this funny drasha that halom is king. Because by Shmuel, Shaul said to Shmuel, wait, who am I that you brought me out of halom? Which literally means here. But the Gemara says, aha, it's here, which means malchut. It's sort of strange. So Mativ Rabbi Rishmal Omri, Yavama Melech, doesn't say brother-in-law was a king. So Amarava Lolozaro Kamar, it means that he got kingship, but not his kids. Just like we saw by Kohen Gadol, maybe he was the call. And then the Gemara goes into what is the meaning of Halom, etc. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this. What does it mean? Why? What would motivate the Gemara to say Moshe was a king? What would motivate it to not to say he's not a king? What do you think? What would motivate you to say Moshe Rabbeinu was a king? What would motivate you to say Moshe was not a king?
Well, he's a leader of all of
them. Good. So at some level, because, okay. Well, first question. Do you think that the actual motivation for saying Moshe is a king is this weird drasha of halom?
No.
Okay, I tend to agree with you. I can't believe that's the actual drasha, because halom just means here. It's a sort of weird drasha. I mean, if I didn't have external motivation to say he was a king, I wouldn't do it. So, first question is, why would you say he's a king? So I would agree with Avi that the simple shot in saying he's a king is, well, he's the national leader of the Jewish people, right, Michael? He's the national leader of the Jewish people. You want to say he's a king? So it could just be he's a national leader, so he's a king, right? That's one level. And if you wanted to argue against it, so why would you say he's not a king? Very good. So you say, we don't
it's true he led, but he was never anointed. Do we have other national leaders that are not kings?
Yeah.
Like who? We have, well, so that's an interesting question. Shoftim aren't necessarily national leaders. Right? It's not clear whether the Shoftim are national leaders. They actually are each described as tribal leaders.
Fine, then
that's way too late. And they aren't, and they take it by force. It's not clear that the Shoftim are. Yeah, Jake.
I was going to say, the Shoftim, they demand, less than 20 years apart, drastically different numbers.
Well, you're assuming that it's apart. That's not clear. You're assuming that Shoftim is consecutive and rather than simultaneous, but that's not clear.
But my point is that either way, they each do a total levy of anyone who's listening to them.
But everyone who's listening to them, who's that?
That's what I'm saying. We know for a fact they would speak to the whole nation.
Correct. We don't. Yeah, they're each talking to several tribes. Yeah, there's good reason to believe in Shoftim they aren't. But do we have leaders who are national but are very much not kings? Oh, come on, you give me. Who's the most obvious? Who's definitely not a king? No. Shmuel. Remember, we talked about this because we're doing Shmuel, remember? No. Yes, but why is Shmuel such a good example? Because he's a national leader, and then they ask for a king, and Shmuel is clearly personally insulted because he's functioning as a king, but he's very much not a king. There's a recognition that you can be a national leader. You can even want a dynasty. Remember, Shmuel wants a dynasty. They just don't want to give it to him and still not be a king. No, I understand the other ones. Yeshua is also a good example. But Shmuel is a good example because he is a national leader. He even wants a dynasty. And the whole drama of the story is that he's distinguished from a king. So my guess is that the machloket about whether Moshe is a king, at least partially, is on the one hand, as Avi says, the reason to say he is a king is, well, he functions as the political and military and religious leader of the entire Jewish people. And when people rebel against him, he has the earth swallow them up. I mean, he holds a lot of power. The reason to say he's not is that just because you're the national leader, you have national influence, doesn't mean you're a king. And even more so, I would add, what's another reason to say he's not a king? Sure, but that's always true. What? So, but also, when does the pasuk say you'll have a king? When you get to Eretz Yisrael. Right, the Pesukim and Shoftim say that when you get there, it's own, you appoint a king. So the read of saying he's not a king could just be, well, we can't have a king in the Midbar. So I think the question of whether he's a king is, I agree with Avi, I don't think that you can read this Agadata as if it's really a machloket about, does Halom, is that a convincing drasha? I think part of it is, on the one hand, he's functioning as a king. On the other hand, there are other national leaders who are very explicitly not kings, even though they function as national leaders, and you're only supposed to be king in Eretz Yisrael. You could put another perspective on it, which is maybe you think king is primarily political, and maybe Moshe, for as much as political, is primarily religious. Correct, right? Maybe it's more machloket is, despite the fact that he is their political leader, do we look at it that way? Or we say, listen, he's a religious leader, and that has certain implications, but a king is more exclusively political or primarily political, and he's not. Right, so my guess is that their machloket is a much broader machloket about the way you think about Tanakh. Possibly, as Avi said, if you really wanted to get meta, you could say that this is part of the machloket in Chazal of whether we're in favor of kings or not. Right, the more you're in favor of kings, the more likely you're to say that Moshe is a king. The more you're against kings and that the whole thing is just you're just giving in. If the Jews ask, you're allowed to have a king, but it's not a mitzvah, the less likely you are to impose that title on Moshe for no reason. Right? So I tend to think that this machlok is much more meta machloke. I'm about king. Now, there is one more possibility, and that is that you always have to wonder whether there's a different pasuk that is driving them. So if, let's say, that it wasn't this drasha in the Gemara, is there another drasha in the Gemara that might, is there another pasuk that might lead to a machloket about whether Moshe is a king? Oh, that's interesting, that he was the son of Paro. That's an interesting one, right?
But I was thinking of a different pasuk, and that is in the Zodah Bracha. The Zodah Bracha, the pasuk says, Torah tzivalanu Moshe, Morasha kihilat Yaakov, Vayhi vishurun melech, Bitasev rashayam yachad shivdei Israel. There was in Yishurun a melech when he gathered the heads of the tribes, right, the Jewish people together. And there's a huge machloket, okay. Vayhi vishurun melech. What does that mean? Amongst the righteous ones, right? Meaning the Jewish people. So who is the melech? So there's a big machloket. Rashi says the melech is God. Right? The Ibn Ezra says it's Moshe. Right? Now, then he quotes, amazingly, a different one. He quotes Rabbi Yehuda Levi, who says, this doesn't happen very often, that he quotes Rabbi Yehuda Levi, like the Kuzari Rabbi Yehuda Levi.
Oh.
And he says, before the Ibn Ezra. You really are bad at this Jewish history thing, aren't you? Yes, he was.
He was in the court that Rambam's father was in or something, right?
Okay, let's go for years. When is Rabbi Yehuda Levi listen? Where'd live?
1,900.
I'm not good at names, I'm not good at time. So basically, I'm not good at history.
Fine, take a guess. What was your guess before you learned you were obviously wrong? Okay, that wouldn't have been terrible, but it's wrong. He's 1070 to 1141, so he dies basically when the Rambam is born.
Okay, I wasn't so far off. I was a bit. I put before they
right. So he's quite early. So he quotes a third position from Yehuda Levi that it is Torah. Ki Amelech Remez LeTorah. Now I think at some level you have to wonder that maybe their machloket is really about this: is Vayhi Bishur Melech. Is that Moshe or is it not? Right? So there's the Pasuk angle, there's the meta machlok about kings and who's a king and the role of kings, and the like, in Tanakh. And if you look, the one person who does seem to agree with what I just said is the Meshech Chachma. So if you look at the last source here on the page, the Meshech Chachma assumes this. He says, "V'nevi nechilta shamosha haya omed umisharet lifneihem umevi alzeh meirabin Gamliel." So he really gets at this very backwards. He says Moshe was serving Yitro in Parshat Yitro. Remember, yeah. How could Moshe serve Yitro according to the Shita as a king? What's the problem? A king can't be mochel on his kavod, right? The Gemara says in Kiddushin that a father is allowed to waive his honor. Rebbe is allowed to waive his honor. A Nasi is allowed to waive his honor, but a king can't. Even if he wants to, he can't waive his honor. And it's undignified for you to be the waiter for other people. So if he's a king, why do we... So you could say that. So he says, right, he was a melech. Ein kvodo machol. So he takes it as a given. That what's the source for the notion that Moshe was a king? Vayhi Bishur and Melech, the pasuk I just quoted. But then he says, if that's the case, if that's the real source for this whole sugya, that Moshe was a king because there's a pasuk, which is admittedly a good source. Right? If you read it like Ibn Ezra, you have an explicit pasuk that he's a king. So he says, Achein alo darshu al vayhi Bishur and Melech ze Moshe. Right? And it's not just Ibn Ezra. Shmot Rabba says the same thing. But what does it say? Behit asei frashe am. When he gathered the people, and the Midrash says, when is that? Beitan Matan Torah, you might call it. Moshe, Matan Torah. Which means that when did he become a king? Matan Torah, which I think is fascinating, because that's suggesting that even if he is a king, what type of king is he? Right? That his kingship is like interpreted through the lens of Torah. We did a few weeks ago. That's the Machloket. Right? In the Psukim, it comes earlier, and it's Machloket Rashi Ramban, whether the Psukim are in order. Where the Ramban says it's in order, Rashi says it's not. He's assuming, like Ramban, that this is in order, and therefore he says, Avo Yidro Bakodem Matan Torah. It's Machloket Gemara also. Obviously, we spent time on this. I don't know why I'm jumping to Rashi and Ramban, but we did it in the Gemara. That was the beginning of this very long Agadatha. Maybe not.
But we did it a few weeks ago. Utanoi de Savri Lachar Matan Torah by Yitro. If you hold like the Tanoim that he came after Matan Torah, then how would you deal with it? So first of all, you could just say, well, according to that, maybe he wasn't a melech. It says, or him came Moshe, Yomen Ushan's of the Imsar Lom, the Shumachi, Loktiv Moshe. So maybe that's why it says Moshe. It doesn't actually say Moshe's name explicitly. They're eating together more. But Mechil Dar Shemoshe Omi Mishamish Amra Sham Shachlu Sudas Tami Chacham Yon Sham Below Lifnei Moshe, etc. Now that adds one more dimension to it, which is obviously right. What he highlights is, well, if you think he's a king, then how do you test this thesis? What is the Meshech Chachma highlighting? If he's a king, how are you going to test the thesis? You need to see whether his actions throughout Chumash accord with that of the king. And the main one that drives the Meshech Chachma is the conviction that a king, unlike any other type of leader, can't waive his rights to honor. So if you see him waiving his rights, then he must be something else. A Nasi, a leader, a Kohen, I don't care, but he can't be a quasi-king, but he can't be Mamasha king, Pshuto Kamashmao. So, right, and so again, you could, but remember, according to the sheet in the Brit that he is a king, then at least things are explicit in the Psukim. Right? You have to deal with that. So that I gave you a summary, and this is, it's not just the Meshech Chachma, it's a several Achronim who were bothered by this. So I gave you here just a summary of a few of the Achronim from the dafyomi.co.il website, or just to make it easier. So they bring three achronic answers. One is the Gerish Carmel. And he says, it's true that you can't be mochel akeh, you're covered for God. But the meal with Yitro says, lefnei ha-elokim. They were eating a meal before God. If that's the case, so he says, it wasn't really that he was serving Yitro or the people there. It was that this was some sort of religious meal, and it was done to honor God. And as we see with like David HaMelech, right, remember David HaMelech? He dances, he's mifazeizu mecharker.
Yes.
Okay, brackets for a moment. When David dances, the Aram, remember? Remember this story? He dances, Michal says, what are you dancing, right? What are you dancing, humiliating yourself in front of the servants of Israel? And what does he say? It's both in Shmuel and in Divrei Hayamim.
We say it every day.
What? You say it every day? What? I mean, you don't read these psukim every day. What? Yeah, Shmuel Bet. Right? Vaya Arona the night by Ir David, Michal Bashol Nishkafa. But she was humiliated in her heart. And what did she say? Oh, you're so honored, O King of Israel, who revealed himself to his servants like one of the empty people. And what did David say to her? I did this in front of God. You know why? Because my God chose me over your father and your family to be king. And that's why I'm going to do it. Meaning your father and your whole family's stuck up opinion of what it means to be king that you can't even rejoice in front of God because you have so much pomp and circumstance. Well, that's why your father was fired and I'm king instead. Because I unakaloti od mizot vayiti shafal beinai. I would be more disgraced. I will do it. I will be honored with those servants. And umichal bacho loya yelet ad yomota. Michal didn't have kids till the day she died. Right? Right? So the Gerish Carmel seems to be channeling that and saying, listen, even if he's king, there is one exception, which is if it's the honor of God that you're doing, then you, it's not just that you're allowed to, but you are actively encouraged to waive your own dignity in favor of, you know, God Almighty.
That's not waiving your dignity.
Right, but meaning you're waiving your own pomp and circumstance, fine? Even though, no, that's, now he uses the words, unikalati od mizor, I would be more disgraced. He recognized this as a disgrace.
Yeah.
Right. No, but David recognizes that acting this way, if it weren't under God, it would be considered disgrace.
Yeah.
Right, and therefore, even though something which might be a disgrace is fine. Now, I will parenthetically point out that this is a very important pasuk, because it is one of the examples of intra-biblical interpretation, parshanut. Because in the parallel story, how many of you know what the words mifazezu micharker mean? Okay, very good. These are not common words, mifazezu micharker. Right? These aren't exactly right. Now, when the story is repeated in Divrei Hayamim, it's repeated as follows: Vatira et Melech David mirakeid u'misacheg. How many of you know what mirakeid u'misacheg means? Dance, and misacheg is to play, right? To be happy, rejoice. Meaning that the Tanakh is being mefaresh itself, because Divrei Hayamim, which is a later book, significantly later. Yes, that's what I'm showing you, is that the later authors of Divrei Hayamim, because it's obviously much, much later. What? Do we know when? Okay, well, so that's a little bit of a hard question. Okay, way later, because remember, Divrei Hayamim goes all the way through Hatzarat Koresh. It goes through Hatzarat Koresh. When is Hatzarat Koresh? It's in... It's the second Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, the Gemara says, who is the author? Ezra. It's really late. It's a historiographical recap of Shmuel Malachim, but it's written, you know, in Bayit Sheni. It's very, very late. Right? Very, 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 very late. And therefore... I don't know what you're talking about.
We're talking about Bayit Sheni.
So, at any rate, parenthetically, it's worth noting that this is one of those cases of clear intra-biblical parshanut, because the retelling of the story says, your average guy might not know what the words mifazez and mechaker means, but they probably know what mirakeid and misachek means. So it just, you know, uses more modern language, okay? It is written by different authors. Masha Asar Lanu, as Reader once said, right? Masha Asar Lanu, Bible criticism, Hitir Lanu, Talmud criticism, right? He's like, by the Torah, you can't say it's multiple authors. By the Gemara, it's multiple authors. Controversial, right? So Divrei Hayamim is like that. Yeah, it was written late. Whoop-dee-doo. It was written in Bayit Sheni. It was. Clearly, it includes Hatzarat Koresh. When I taught Divrei Hayamim, I gave a shiur on the nature of historiography in Tanakh and how Divrei Hayamim retells stories in Meir's third grade class a few years ago, 2 years ago, when Meir made a siyum on Divrei Hayamim. As they do. And when I asked them, does anyone know anything about Divrei Hayamim? Because I figured that who knows. For sort of half of them knew stuff in Divrei Hayamim. And one was like, yeah, it ends with that Hatzarat Koresh. I'm like, that's better than any of you guys in Yeshiva. Then if I asked you, what is the last scene? You would not know it's Hatzarat Koresh. Cyrus's declaration.
Oh, Cyrus.
Koresh. Cyrus.
Well,
do we think it's Hatzarat Koresh? No. Okay. So, close parentheses. The next Perush of the Bikurei David, quoted in the Parades Yosef, is from Tosfot and Sanhedrin, based on Tosfot, is the suggestion that the Asay of Kavara Torah is stronger than Kavara Melech. And therefore, he comes up with a big Chiddush. He says a regular king can't be Mochel in his Kavod, but a king who's also a Talmud Chacham, because he's allowed to be mochel on his kavod of Torah, I find this very unlikely. But he comes up with a very overly lumdish svara, which is that the Gemara in Sukkah says as follows: that something that isn't normally a wall for Shabbos, if it's Sukkot and it is a wall for Sukkot, So on Sukkot of, right, on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, so Migo, since it's recognized as a Sukkah wall, the Gemara says this, so it's recognized as a Shabbat wall. That makes sense. This is strange because what? David HaMelech wasn't a Talmud Chacham, Shlomo HaMelech wasn't a Chacham, right, meaning? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the note, you would, right, that's a little bit weird because you would say, what, because he's also a Talmud Chacham, so he's, his kingship becomes integrated into his Talmud Torah. I don't think that's right. And again, the Meshech Chachma, his problem was again that he's not a king until Matan Torah, which at least according to one day in the Gemara, that works. Okay, so to recap. First, we looked at some more Ha'orot and Kohen Gadol, but I'll leave that to the side. Let's focus on the king. So I said, in the Gemara, the question of whether is, sorry, then we did the why would Moshe slap Paro, which I said, again, in the Gemara is a machloket of whether you honor a king even if he's a Rasha, meaning whether it's by dint of the person or by dint of the office. We added the possibility that maybe Moshe is trying one last-ditch effort to shake Paro out of his stupor. Fine. Then we got to the Machloket about king. We said, even though the Gemara presents it as a Gzeret HaKatuv in Halom, it's much more reasonable that that's not the only thing going on. So one possibility is it's arguing in general about thematically. On the one hand, he acts like a king. On the other hand, there are other national leaders that are not kings, possibly one. Possibly two is, this is an expression of the general machloket. Are we in favor of kings? In which case, we should look at it as, or not. Third possibility is that the psukim set up king as something that happens in Eretz Yisrael, right? So it might be a parshanut machloket of whether you could have something like a king pre-Matan Torah. The fourth possibility, as I said, is it's a machloket in the psukim. By he... Vishur and Melech, but Sadev Rashayam, we saw it's a machloket Rishonim. Is that God? Is it Moshe? Is it Torah? So it could just be that it's a machloket in the psukim. Add to that, we said, okay, well, if you really want to test this thesis that he is a king, so then you need to say, well, does he act like a king? And for the Mefarshim, the main test case that they have is this scene in which he's serving Yitro, which creates a problem because kings shouldn't be doing that. So the Meshech Chachma has one solution, which is, just like by the Kohen thing, we saw that he wasn't always a Kohen. He's Medayik in the Pasuk, but he returned Melech, with Asev Rashayim. He only becomes a king in Matan Torah. And therefore, he wasn't yet a king. The Gerish Carmel, I think, channeling the story of David and Michal, says that even if you are a king, there are exceptions to that rule, and that's Kavod Shamayim. And it wasn't really Yitro he was serving. He was just serving at this meal, but it was really about God. And then you have the very fancy Lamdish Machloket, the sheet of Bikrei David, which is, that his malchut like integrates into the fact that he's not malchacham and it can be mochel on that, which I found to be extremely odd. And again, we saw the random comments about Kohen, right? Did he get back his kuna for a little bit and other things? But that was really the close of this. I don't know if we'll come back after break to the end of this this Gemara. No, I'm in the States. Next Thursday is the last. One, but I'm not here, so this is the last for Zman. We have like three or probably four or five classes, something like that in Kayetz. So I'm not sure if we'll come back to this about the question of honoring a king, of a righteous king, not a righteous king, which is quasi-agadic, quasi-halachic. And then there's also this machloket in the Gemara that I sort of skipped over, which is in general, when you give honor to a person, do you assume that that honor continues to their children? Or not, we'll see. I'm not sure what Agadat I'll do when we get back. I have, 6 weeks or so to figure out what Agadat we do when we start. If you have requests of Agadat in Zvachim, I'll take that into account before I can figure it out. But in the meantime, we at least somewhat rigorously did like this, blot plus continuum of Agadot. Again, there is this one more little section here, so maybe we'll finish it or we'll do something else. I'm not sure. Okay, guys. Shkoyach.